Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast, episode 67. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer, and joining me today is Mylan Chavez from Miami, Florida. She is an ambassador for the company iGaze, and she has SMA Type 2. We've met before at SMA conferences, and excited to have her here today. So, Mylan, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm super happy to be here.
Absolutely. Well, before we get started, if everyone could just listen to a brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Genentech, the makers of a new FDA-approved treatment for SMA. To learn about our study results across different types of people with SMA, visit approvedforsma.com. That's approvedforsma.com.
All right. Well, Mylan, to get started, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and your background when you were diagnosed with SMA, and just what it was like for you growing up with a disability?
All right. Well, I was born in Cuba, and at that time, you know, my parents noticed that I wasn't reaching certain milestones. I never got to crawl, but when they would take me to the doctor and stuff, they didn't really know what I had. They had, like, no idea, except for this one doctor that my mom visited, and he said that he maybe perhaps thought that I could have something similar to Duchenne's because he read it in a book. So that was about the only thing that they knew. And the worst part is that they told her that I wouldn't live past 2, which obviously for any parent is really upsetting. But I didn't really get diagnosed until we moved to the States, and I was about 1 year old and 4 months, and then I got sick, had some complications, etc., and they finally took me to the hospital, Miami Children's Hospital at the time, and there is when they did, like, the whole works, you know, diagnostics, genetic testing and everything, and that's when they found out that I had SMA type 2, which, you know, like, for a lot of families and stuff, it seems really scary, and it really seems like, you know, as I say, when they tell you, oh, your kid isn't going to live past 2, it seems kind of like a death sentence. But I'm just really grateful that my mom was, I don't know, I guess she embraced it really well with a lot of grace, and she just took advantage of that and went to the library and started reading everything she possibly could about resources, SMA itself, you know, the programs out there, and she really championed, I think, my early years to make sure that I had all the opportunities I could as a kid growing up with a disability, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, you said you're originally from Cuba. When did you move to the States? Was that when you were younger, or, like, when you were closer to your adulthood, or?
No, we moved in 1996, so I was about 1 year old and 4 months.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. And for you growing up, like, in school and that kind of thing, what were some of the things you encountered, like, accessibility-wise, you know, acclimating into the school system? You know, did you find the accommodations you needed, or what was that experience like for you?
Well, I went to a, like, relatively small elementary school, about 2 blocks away from my house. But before that, the educational system, let's call it that, they wanted to put me into, like, a special ed school. Uh-huh. And we lived in an apartment complex that has other people with disabilities at the time. Well, I still live here, but
sure.
My mom, you know, met the neighbors and stuff, and the neighbor's daughter was in that special ed school, and, you know, they would tell her they don't teach anything necessarily in that school. They just, it's kind of like a daycare, right? They just keep them busy doing activities and things like that. My mom was like, absolutely not, you know, I have to get an education. I have to learn because I'm plenty capable, and we're going to have to fight whoever we have to fight to get into regular ed. So that's what my mom did. She reached out to, like, the Board of Education. My mom's always been super, I don't know, I want to say aggressive. Because she's a fighter, and I have to give her, you know, props for that, because she will take down anyone she has to take down. So, anyways, eventually, when I finally went to elementary school, it wasn't accessible, like, at all. There was no ramps. They had no idea how to deal with a student with a disability, so that's when you have to start, you know, the whole IEP process and advocating for what you mean. So eventually they gave me a paraprofessional or one-to-one who would be with me in class all the time and take my notes and, you know, be my scribe. And if there was any, like, infrastructure issues with ramps and things like that, which didn't exist, and they weren't being built, my mom would call the commissioner and the mayor and the whole squad. And then it just got to a point where my mom called so many people that when I would show up to school, the principal of the school would be waiting for us at the door to make sure that we had everything we needed. So at least they were, you know, they built everything that they needed to build, and the school became really accessible in all parts, you know, the elevator, the ramps, the curb cuts, the anything. So I didn't really have an issue for 1 through 5 grades, and then middle school, whole different ballpark, but no issues with accessibility or anything like that, because then the IEP just follows you, you know, throughout your whole educational career. So,
sure, sure. Well, and your mom, like, her advocacy spirit, and it sounds a lot like mine. And I mean, there, you know, I also was like, you know, tried to put in the special ed, you know, class when I was really young too, and mom, you know, fought for so I could be put in the, you know, in the regular classes and all that. And yeah, no, it's, I mean, it's a common trait among many parents in the SMA community to, is that, like, you have to fight for those resources and those accommodations. So yeah,
for sure.
I'm glad it worked out eventually. But well, and you said too, you know, like, middle school, I know it was a huge transition, just like socially and everything else. I'm curious, kind of, as you were growing up in school, what kind of interests you had, and, like, did, like, were you involved in any clubs or extracurriculars or anything like that?
When I was a lot younger, I was really passionate about marine biology. I guess just, I was really in love with, like, Jacques Cousteau, and I liked his work, and I loved how passionate he was about sea life and protecting the ocean and all that. But then when I grew up a bit, like, I know that I realized that being a marine biologist probably just meant spending years and years in a research lab with very minimal interaction with the actual ocean. So I was like, no, I don't want to do that anymore. And then I got into psychology when I was in elementary school. I was in, like, for my whole career educationally, I was in gifted, but in elementary, we had, like, this after-school class where they would take all the kids and make them do, like, puzzles and figure stuff out and do research. Like, they made us build our own board game one time, and things like that. So that was nice. I was always really curious about everything. So I don't know, I just had a passion for learning. But then later in high school, I got into the Health Academy. And with that, we competed on a regional, state, and nationwide level. And I was in the category for speaking skills, and basically we just had to deliver a 5-minute speech based on the topic they would give at the time. They would give it prior, and then you deliver the speech the day of the contest, and I won that. So that was pretty cool. I really enjoyed that. I really love medicine, and I really love health, and then all of that just led me to majoring in psychology in college. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And I want to get into college in a little bit, but also, you know, before we get into that, just going back to your school experience, like socially, you know, did you, you know, and this is something different kind of for everyone in the SMA community, but like growing up, did you get a lot of questions about your disability or, you know, were, what was kind of the attitude from your peers, you know, I'm curious about for you?
I want to say that I'm super blessed and that I don't really have any like bad experiences or difficult experiences with the students that I went to school with. No one really like asked me about SMA or bullied me or anything like that. And that's been pretty consistent, you know, from elementary to high school. I wasn't really social whatsoever in middle school because middle school sucks.
I think we can all relate there. Yeah.
It's the worst time for everyone, I think. And then in high school, I just said, you know, I really want to change that. I guess I was really introverted and antisocial, and I didn't want to be like that anymore. So I started joining, like, community service clubs, and like I told you, the medicine competitions and lots of stuff like that. And I feel like if you just confront, you know, social situations with like confidence and not so much be like afraid of who you are or whatever, I think people embrace that a lot, and then they don't see any reason to be like asking about your disease and stuff because they just see you the way that you are, and the disease becomes a secondary thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like your personality outshines in those situations if you're just really trying to participate and make friends and be social and just be yourself, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's great. And, no, hearing you talk about, too, all of your interests and, you know, academic pursuits, it's really fascinating. So you said that kind of led to studying psychology in college. So I do want to talk about your college transition. First off, like, you know, thinking back to when you were in high school and thinking about the next steps, like, did you want to live away from home? And, you know, what was kind of your mindset there?
Well, at the moment, you know, senior, junior year, I really wanted to leave out of state. I wanted to go to Johns Hopkins University. That was like the dream school for me at the moment. You know, it's the best school for medicine. I wanted to be a psychiatrist. I had all that like passion. And I applied to, I want to say, 10 to 12 colleges, and I got accepted into a few of them. Johns Hopkins didn't accept me, and that was really rough at the moment, because it's like, wow, you know, I really want to go there. This is like the dream, and then they just tell you no.
Right.
So that just kind of made me reassess exactly how I wanted to go about things. I did get accepted into another pretty prestigious private school up in New York called Hofstra University. And I was pretty set on going there until I figured out all the numbers in terms of tuition, and they were going to give me a scholarship, but even still, I would have to pay $18,000 out of pocket. Mm. And that just wasn't going to be, you know, viable for my family. You know, we're pretty moderate people in terms of the economic status, so, and it just wasn't going to be possible. And so I started looking into just being local. Another alternative was Gainesville, University of Florida, and I really liked that. The issue with that still was, they, you know, I would have obviously have to move. It's like 5 hours away from home, and I would have to go with my mom and all of that. And just the cost of living on campus was going to be so much money that we also didn't see a way of doing that. Because of dorm situation and everything, and they wanted me to move there like immediately after graduating. So again, another possibility that couldn't come true. So I eventually went just to FIU, Florida International University. It's about 40 minutes, 30 minutes away from home. And either way, I was really happy there. It's a huge campus, and that's exactly what I wanted. It kind of felt like a city within itself. Lots of diversity, lots of different people, lots of just interesting stuff going on all the time. So I felt okay just commuting to and from college to home. And that's it, really. I mean, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed my experience there. I graduated early because I had a lot of credits already from high school and stuff.
Sure, sure. That's great. No, I also commuted all 4 years in college as well, because I went to NC State, which was only like 15, 20 minutes from my house. And so it worked out. But yeah, that's really cool. And thinking too about that transition, you know, what was it like kind of getting acclimated to the campus? And, you know, speaking as someone, again, who also commuted, I know, yeah, it's like, yeah, you're not living on campus, but it's still a whole new ball game in terms of, you know, you don't have a regular aide with you and all these different factors could have come into play. So what was that transition like for you in terms of gaining more independence and getting used to the college atmosphere?
I mean, I really like structure environments, because I feel that if I don't like have that, then I just kind of, you know, wander off and get distracted and things like that. So acclimating to college was really unique, but also good, because you just want to be like your own person, you know, and do your own thing and schedule classes for your own time. So it was nice. I kind of missed having my scribe, because they're awesome. I mean, if you really click with them, they're really amazing people that help you out a lot. So I kind of missed that aspect of, you know, being in grade school. But in college, I would just go with my nurse. I had a nurse, like, all the time, because of the, you know, I'm trached and ventilated, so they would just drive me there. And then whatever I needed, usually I would just take notes myself on my tablet, or if I wasn't feeling great, then I would just take pictures, you know, all of that. They allow it if you ask them and stuff ahead of time. It was just cool to just, you know, be your own independent self and have lunch whenever you want, or skip a class.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Hey, we've all done it, not going to lie.
My first year, like, psychology class was full of 400 students. And sometimes I would just walk in and be like, yeah, no, I'm not doing this today. And then I would leave.
Those intro courses, for sure. They're, yeah, it gets way more interesting once you get further into your major. But yeah, for sure.
Yeah, in the beginning, it's just kind of like boring.
Yeah. It's a lot of the credits you got to get out of the way, for sure. But that's really cool. And before we continue, if everyone could listen to one more word from our sponsor, and we will be right back.
This podcast is made possible by a sponsorship from Genentech. Are you living with SMA, or are you a caregiver for someone who is? A new treatment has just been FDA approved based on studies of different types of people living with SMA. Genentech extends a special thanks to all of the individuals, families, and healthcare providers who participated in the studies that led to making this new treatment option a reality. To learn more about this new treatment, visit approvedforsma.com.
All right. Well, after, you know, skipping classes freshman year and all that, as you got further in your major, I know you talked about being a psychiatrist. Was that still your goal throughout college, or did that evolve? You know, what was that kind of career path like?
No, it absolutely evolved. After sophomore year in college, I decided that it's just not something that I wanted to do anymore. And it's not because I lost interest in psychology and the field, but I just felt that the curriculum in college was so oriented towards, like, research and numbers and kind of like this other side of the field that I just wasn't passionate about it. And I'm really interested in like the social aspect, the one-to-one aspect, the personal aspect of psychology. And I didn't see myself continuing into the master's and then into the doctorate. Because additional to that, it's such a competitive field, you know, and it would have been about 10 years committing to it. And I just decided that maybe there was other ways that I could help people on a personal level and then on a grander level, I guess, to make an impact in like society. So I finished and I graduated. Because other than that, I had some family issues going on, so I really needed to graduate and, you know, get out of school fast. Sure. I don't know, it's kind of sad because I really wish I had more interest in what I majored in, but I honestly, after the second year, I was like, this isn't for me anymore, you know?
Oh, I think that's an experience for a lot of college students. Is it, like you said, it evolves and, you know, it's kind of like one major kind of like, you know, it may spark an idea for something else and you find out your real passion, you know, and that, happens. So then what was it like then after that? Like, I mean, throughout the rest of college and then, you know, once you started working, what was kind of path did you follow there?
Well, after college, I didn't really, know what to do anymore. Cause as you know, and as many of us know, that if we work anywhere and make any kind of money, then immediately our benefits are affected.
Yeah.
Which sucks.
Yeah.
So I would just do things like on the side and help people write essays, and I would tutor them, and I would, you know, help out in other educational ways. But that wasn't really like my interest either. I was just doing it to help and also to make some money on the side. But then so grateful that about a year-ish after I graduated, I went to my first QSMA conference ever. And
yeah.
In the exhibition room, I met iGaze, and a few months after that, they offered me an internship, and as they say, the rest is history.
That's really cool. I did not know that. That's where you got connected with them, was at a conference. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
What was, can you tell a little more about, like, what you did during that internship and what you do now for them as an ambassador?
Well, it's kind of a funny story, and I really like sharing it. So
sure.
When we went to conference, my boyfriend, Paul, he was like, hey, let's go look at that device over there. And I just told him, there's no way I could afford that. Let's not even go look at it. And he's like, no, maybe it's something that can really help you. You know, we never know what's going to happen. And so we went and I talked to them and they demoed the device for me. And just a little information about the iGaze. It's a hands-free device that you can use because it tracks your iGaze. So there's very minimal use of the hands. It's for people with limited mobility and all of that. So about a month after conference, they came to my house. They let me demo the computer for a couple of days. And then one of the kind of like the orientation days, the woman that came, Beth Ann, wonderful, wonderful lady. I love her so much. She's like, hey, you know, just try to go on social media for a bit. I'm going to go check your router because we were having internet issues. And in like 20 seconds, I logged her out of her Facebook, logged myself in, took a selfie and posted it on my Facebook. And she was like amazed. They told the owner, the CEO of iGaze, and he's like, I didn't even know you couldn't take selfies on it. So after that, they just like really enjoyed how agile I was with the device. And a little bit after that, they had a news opportunity to talk about the device and communication rights and all of that. But none of their clients at the moment in South Florida wanted to do the news piece. And they asked me, and I said, of course. So then they enjoyed that so much that they offered me an internship shortly after that, In that time, I just did demonstration videos and YouTube videos and a little blog, and I would just promote the device and try to get the message out there that it's so necessary and to have the resource to be able to communicate, because so many times, like, not even in just a home setting, but in a hospital setting, you know, patients are left without the ability to consent, to say I'm uncomfortable, to say I'm itchy, to say, you know, I want water or whatever, you know, and it's just sad that they're not able to say what they want, because at the end of the day, in terms of health and things, that's what really matters. You know, that's the most important thing, is the patient's right to communicate. So I use my eye gaze at home. I have it right here in front of me right now. It's mounted on my kitchen counter. And I've been just so grateful, because they've shown me, like, just a way to keep advocating and keep talking to my friends and keep in communication with everyone, because, you know, with SMA, some days are good and some days are awesome, but at the same time, some days are bad and I can't even, like, lift up my hand to text on my phone, you know. So having the eye gaze gives me the opportunity to keep in touch and keep doing what I love to do. So it's really fun. And then now, after the internship, I was going to conferences and stuff for them, and that was super awesome. But then, you know, the pandemic happened, so I just been at home, and whenever someone needs help with, like, technical things, and I try to FaceTime them and help them figure it out and things like that.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. No, it's amazing what kind of technologies are evolving every day. I mean, you know, like, for me, it's, you know, my Deco robotic arm, and no, that's amazing that, like, what the eye gaze does. So that's great. And mm-hmm. And yeah, obviously a lot of our lives have been kind of upended this year, but you know, it's, and I do want to ask about that too, like, you know, in light of the pandemic and everything. I don't want to talk too in depth, but what is kind of, like, your day-to-day life look like now, and in terms of just staying as active as possible, and, you know, while still, you know, being mostly in quarantine to protect your health, what's kind of, like, a typical day like for you now?
Now, a typical day for me is to sleep in as much as I can. And then I get up, you know, have my shower, and have my little routine, and then I will go to the living room and log into Animal Crossing.
Nice, nice.
No, but, you know, it's just things that keep me busy. I'll watch movies or play some video games or, you know, do some work on the eye gaze. Other than that, I've been doing some live Instagram feeds with Lexi from California. I'm not sure if you know her.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, we'll go on, you know, we'll go on live and just talk for a couple hours with other people and go through our stories and our experiences. And then on Friday nights, I do a Facebook video chat with the South Florida chapter of CareSMA. And I'll just talk to them and we'll, you know, again, share stories, what happened in the week, and just, you know, it's just a way of keeping connected and making sure that we're all, like, staying in touch and that no one feels like they're alone during this, because it's really rough. It was really rough for me at the beginning, because I feel like I'm such a, like, goal-oriented person, and that goal requires going out.
Yeah.
And so not going out anymore was really difficult for me, because I'm like, I'm not getting anything done, you know?
Oh, it's definitely a tough transition for a lot of us. And I think, you know, I mean, me being an extrovert, like, yeah, it's definitely hard, like, not being, like, it's harder for me now having a work-life balance, because, like, I was already working remotely before all this happened, but, you know, I had that life balance and getting out a lot and, you know, even just going to Barnes & Noble and, or getting out to restaurants with friends, it's, you know, it's definitely upended our lives a lot, and trying to adjust the transition has been difficult, but, you know, I think that's great that, especially with social media and, you know, doing other things virtually, I think staying connected with other people in the community is essential. So that's great you're doing that with Lexi. That's awesome.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
Definitely. And shifting gears just a little, I did want to talk a little bit about treatments and kind of what you're on, and of course, with the news about Evrysdi, kind of your thoughts on that. So just wanted to start, first off, like, you know, what, if any, treatments are you on right now, and what has that experience been like for you?
I'm currently on Spinraza. I started in March of last year, so I've been on that for a little bit now. I think I'm on dose 7, which is great. I've felt so far a lot of improvements, and again, for anyone who's listening and doesn't really know about Spinraza and things like that, a lot of improvements for us means something as simple as just having a little bit more stamina to last throughout the day. But in other terms, I've had a lot of like movement in my right arm, which I was essentially not moving anymore. I have a lot of endurance to do the things that I wasn't barely able to get by anymore, you know?
Yeah, sure.
And I just feel a lot more energized and a lot more, like, I don't know, just, I guess, in a way, kind of stable, because it was getting a little hard before Spinraza to get through a day without being absolutely exhausted. And I'm really grateful for that. In terms of, like, Evrysdi, I was considering the change because it's a lot more like tailored to your weight, to your age and things like that, and I was interested, but I feel like at the moment there's too many questions about side effects and things, so I just wanted to wait a little bit and see how it pans out before making the switch, because I don't really mind the injection and things like that. I get injected at the base of my neck.
Oh, really? So, you are. I actually do that too. I have not. It's rare that I come across anyone who also does the cervical injection.
Yeah, I do the cervical.
Yeah, that's great. Oh, that's, yeah. No, I I'm in the same boat too, because like I've actually had really good experiences with the injections. I actually just had one this week, and yeah, it's interesting because like for me too. I assume, did you have fusion as well? Like when you were younger?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So, it was the same boat for me. They couldn't find a place in my spine, and so they went to the cervical route. And I was very concerned. I don't know about you. I was very concerned when they first said that they were going to, you know, stick a shot in my neck. But after getting over that initial anxiety and then, you know, going through it the one time and several times after that, I'm like, oh, this is actually pretty easy. So, yeah, it's the same for me. So, yeah. That's great.
Yeah, but the cervical injection is pretty rare among us, I think.
Yeah, it is. Well, I think, and a lot of it has to do with just, like, finding a doctor who's willing to do it and has experience in that area specifically. So, I know I'm very fortunate in that regard. But that's really cool. No, it's good to finally know someone else who gets the needle in the neck routine.
So. Yeah, for sure.
That's great. Well, that's awesome. And I want to, again, thank you for coming on today and sharing your story. This has been great. And before we close out, do you have any advice for others, particularly others in the SMA community, maybe younger people who have SMA or anyone in that boat, just any advice you have for anyone in the community?
I guess all I really want to say is that, you know, right now is such a tumultuous time, not only like in the nation, but also for SMA, I think, because there's now suddenly 3 treatments for SMA, and it's such a interesting time to be part of the community. And I just want to tell everyone that's out there that, you know, it's good to embrace your voice and it's good to embrace who you are, because having SMA is such a, it's such a beautiful thing, and that's just, like, what I honestly feel about it. It's so wonderful, and it's hard to get to that point because, you know, society teaches us that being disabled is bad, but it really isn't. It's just a different way of living, and it's just a different, you know, form of existing, but at the end of the day, we're all living in the same experience and doing the same things and sharing this planet. So, like, there's no reason to feel upset about your condition, however progress or not progress, and maybe just embrace it, embrace who you are. It's part of your genetics. It's as much as your genetics as the color of your eyes or the shape of your hair, you know? So just be your honest self, be your true self, share your story, be who you are, and everything's just going to fall into place. And it seems scary at times, but I promise that it's totally worth it.
That's great. No, I really appreciate you sharing that. And I think that's a great message for anyone in the SMA community out there. So thank you. And also, where can people find you? I know you talked about, I know you're on Instagram and everything. Where's the best place for people to find you there if they want to connect?
On Instagram, I'm May the Sunrise, May as in the month, and then the sunrise, no periods, no underscores, no everything, no anything. And then on Facebook, I'm just Maylin Chavez, and that's about it. I only exist on those two platforms.
That's great. No, I know, and like I said, I love what you're doing on Instagram and connecting and everything, so that's great. Well, Maylin, awesome. Thank you again for joining today. And I apologize. I think I said Maylin earlier, but that was my bad. So my apologies for not
being. It's okay.
Thank you so much again for joining today and sharing your story. And for our listeners out there, you can find more stories like this by subscribing to this podcast. We're all over Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts. And you can also connect with us on our forums, follow us on our main website at smanewstoday.com. That's where you can find all of our content, multimedia, news, columns, etc. So thank you everyone for listening, and we will see you next time. Take care, everyone.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com, and be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums, a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.